This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 24th of May 2024. Hello, and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 23rd of May 2024. Your readers today are Tony Bergstrom.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Jane Rutter.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are Major Junction Plan Approved, Tories' new leader set to head County Council, and chance to have a say on design of new green space. So we start with the story behind the first headline.
Major Junction Plan Approved. Plans for the long-awaited major revamp of Junction 9 of the M3 have been approved. As previously reported, National Highways £200 million scheme will create more links between the M3 and A34 with the aim of reducing congestion, improving safety and introducing new networks for active travel. The plans have been granted a development consent order, DCO, by Secretary of State for Transport, Mark Harper MP. National Highways will change the junction so that it has free-flowing links between the M3 and A34 in both directions. The junction will be widened with two bridges built to create a gyratory, allowing the M3 to increase from three lanes to four as it passes under the junction. The southbound slip road onto the M3 will also be extended so traffic has more time to join the motorway and improve safety of the junction with upgraded signs and gantries. Main construction work will begin in 2025, with National Highways aiming to have it completed within 3 years. National Highways senior project manager for the scheme, Tom Beasley, said, "We are delighted with today's announcement by the DCO for the M3 Junction 9 improvement has been granted. We look forward to commencing construction to start solving the issues at that junction. This represents years of working with local communities and key stakeholders to create the best possible solution. Thank you to everyone who's contributed to the development of the project so far. We will continue to work closely with people to keep them informed and minimise disruption as we move into the construction phase." MP for Winchester and Chandlers Ford, Steve Bryan, welcomed the news. He said, "For more than a decade, I've fought to secure this vital transformation at Junction 9 of the M3 at Winnell. It's a national priority of major regional importance, with a big local win in terms of congestion through Winnell in particular, but many other parts of Winchester and the villages. The work itself will inevitably cause disruption, but will really pay off in the end, a good day. However, the approval of the plans has been met with dismay by some. Chris Gillingham from Winchester Friends of the Earth called the decision disappointing but not surprising."
Tories' new leader set to head County Council. The Conservative group of Hampshire County Council has selected its new leader, who will almost certainly assume the leadership of the authority. Councillor Nick Adams-King is replacing Councillor Ron Humby, who announced he would be standing down on May the 15th. Councillor Adams-King, who currently holds the executive role for Universal Services, said, "Last Thursday, May the 16th, my colleagues in the Conservative group at Hampshire County Council elected me as their new group leader, which means that on Thursday, Today, that is May the 23rd, I will be our group's candidate to be the new leader of Hampshire County Council. Under my leadership, Hampshire County Council will continue to strive to be an efficient, caring, innovative, business-friendly council, one that cares for our environment, tackles the challenge of climate change, and actively promotes the positive and necessary work we do to protect our most vulnerable Hampshire residents. He also said that Councillor Jan Warwick, currently executive member for Younger Adults and Health and Wellbeing, would be the next deputy leader. My style is collegiate and cooperative. I look forward to working in that vein with my party colleagues and opposition members alike. No one enters politics to do harm. We just disagree about how to do good. Finally, I'd like to pay tribute to former leader Councillor Humby and deputy leader Councillor Ros Chadd for steering the council through two intensely difficult years. Rob stands down knowing he has changed Hampshire County Council for the better. We owe him a huge vote of thanks, not just for his sacrifice and hard work of the last 2 years, but for his many years of service to the people of Hampshire. Since 2013, Councillor Humby has represented the Bishop's Waltham electoral division at Hampshire County Council and has previously held the position of Cabinet Member for Economy, Transport and Environment. He was Deputy Leader of Hampshire County Council between 2019 and 2022 before being elected as Leader in May 2022 after the resignation of Councillor Keith Manns. Councillor Humby said he had decided to step down and then retire from politics before the 2025 County Council elections. Councillor Humby said, "Fortunately, however, this will now enable me to spend more time with my family, children and grandchildren." Councillor Adams King will be the candidate for leadership in the County Council Annual General Meeting on May the 23rd.
Chance to have a say on design of new green space. Residents can influence the design of 60 acres of new green open space within major plans to redesign a former army base on the outskirts of Winchester. The Church Commissioners, in partnership with Legal and General Investment Management, LGIM, and Gisborne, is calling on people to complete a survey which will inform the future use and management of the green space at Bushfield Camp. Through the online survey, which closes on May the 31st, the developers want to understand how they can work with the community to maximise green space. The survey asks what residents would like to see incorporated as part of the 60 acres. John Weir, head of real estate for the Church Commissioners, said, "This listening exercise is vital to ensure we can place community at the heart of our plans for Bushfield. Hundreds of Winchester's residents have already come forward to share their aspirations for the future use and management of the green space. We will share the full results over the summer. However, from the data gathered to date, a large proportion of residents have said they want improved access with the land opened up for public use. Similarly, a significant majority wants us to prioritise biodiversity conservation alongside commissioning a third-party expert study to inform the future land management. We're looking forward to seeing the full range of responses in due course, which we will take forward to deliver a wealth of benefits for Winchester's residents and natural surroundings. Serving as a military base until 1979, Bushfield Camp was left unused for more than four decades. In 2013, it was allocated in the Winchester City Local Plan as an employment-led site for regeneration. the developers have come under fire from residents expressing concerns over biodiversity, traffic, the height of buildings, and the loss of walking areas. If approved, the outline planning application submitted in October will see the Bushfield Camp development deliver an innovation park to the south of the city centre, aiming to attract major employers to Winchester looking for new headquarters across life science, academia, media and health sectors.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Bannister, Linda Margaret Bannister, née McEwen, on the 8th of May, aged 71. Bryant, Verna Agnes Bryant, at home on the 9th of May, aged 86. Caldwell, Eric Victor Caldwell, at home on the 11th of May, aged 94. Chant, Derek John Chant, on the 9th of May, aged 85. Cooper, Rita Cooper, formerly Ship, on the 28th of April, at St. Catherine's View, aged 95. Dally, Anne Therese Dally, on the 8th of May. Green, Rosemary Phyllis Green, at West Home Care Home on the 8th of May. Hamlin, Joan Hamlin, née Tuppany, on the 5th of May, age 92, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Parker, John Henry Parker, on the 5th of May, aged 86. Yarny, Trevor Frederick Yarny, at Dunwood Manor Care Home on the 6th of May, aged 73. And now we have Christian comment.
And that comes from Nigel Hemming and is entitled Perseverance. In November, I was diagnosed with lymphoma, a type of blood cancer. The word cancer carries serious and life-threatening connotations and will no doubt resonate with many reading this. But lymphoma, it turns out, has good prognosis. As my body now recovers from the physical effects of the chemotherapy, I have spent time reflecting on the emotional and spiritual impact of my journey over the past few months. I don't believe that God brought about my disease, but I am beginning to realize how He's used this reason to shape me in my faith. Those who choose to follow Jesus are not excused from hard times. In fact, He pretty much promised suffering to His disciples, although He also promised help and encouragement. In this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world. And that's from John chapter 16. Suffering is very much a part of life, and be it karma, Zen, destiny, or cosmic balance, every world religion has their own explanation. The prevailing Western secular worldview, however, makes no accommodation for pain, because it essentially purports no specific meaning for life, other than the basic pursuit of happiness. Those with no faith must resort to simply getting through the inevitable tough times with the aid of medication or distraction. Almost all of the New Testament writers, however, see suffering as an opportunity for character growth, like James, for example. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. And that's from James chapter 1. In my experience, it's in my day-to-day quiet connections with Jesus that I've come to know peace, despite my challenging circumstances. On the days that I was feeling lousy, I sensed his calm comfort, but also a freedom to be real and honest about how I felt and what I needed. I often felt a sense of frustration that I didn't have the physical or mental energies to do anything but rest and recover. But in the midst of all this, I never doubted his love for me. With the help of an army of prayer supporters cheering me on, I focused on being in the present and getting through each day, knowing that God was with me and that things would improve. I have the privilege of knowing a handful of people who I consider to be close to God. In general, they are older in years and have worked through very real losses and struggles in their lives. I really want to emulate the richness of their faith, but I've realized that will only be possible by also working through my own struggles with the same deep courage and trust that they have continued to demonstrate. In truth, we can only really know that God is always with us when we've walked with him through the deepest of difficult experiences. If that is you today, then may God's peace and blessing be with you. And that's from Nigel Hemming, who's the senior pastor of Winchester Vineyard Church.
Next, we have the letters to the editor. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Nine letters this week, not very many this week, compared with some weeks. Anyway, so we'll get started with the first letter.
And this first letter is from Teresa Skelton, and it's entitled Court Case. I was somewhat surprised to read about myself in Basingstoke Magistrates Court on page 5 of last week's Chronicle. The original case has had a complete media blank for 8 years, and no court reporter attended the recent hearing. No wonder you got nearly everything wrong. I was never fined. The issue was costs. The court fully accepted the terms of payment I have always observed. The report also omits what the January 2016 case was all about. In brief, whilst attending a public meeting of the Police and Crime Panel in Ashburton Hall, Winchester, I was violently seized from behind by a PCSO whilst conversing with a counsellor. This man dragged me from the room, injuring me in the process. He then claimed I assaulted him, and I was charged, tried, and convicted on his and another officer's perjury. I made a sworn statement about this at the recent magistrates' hearing in March, to which you refer. From the beginning, the CPS muddied the waters. They misrepresented the PCSO as having been seated as a member of the audience. In reality, he had been in full uniform on a call. They conceded that he had, quote, acted outside his duty, unquote. This enabled them to reduce the charge from assault on a designated person, i.e. a police officer, to common assault, denying me a jury trial at which police mendacity might be too publicly exposed. As it was, the sentencing magistrate in Aldershot imposed no penalty, hence no fine. It might be added that throughout, contrary to their legal obligations, Police withheld all disclosure useful to my defence. You then bring up more ancient history regarding COVID clapping. Ask yourselves, did the nurses get a decent pay rise? Did the Tories adequately fund the NHS? No. That letter is from Theresa Skelton, Hyde Close, Winchester.
And this letter is from John Morse, who is Theresa's husband, and it's entitled Wife in Dock. Last week's Chronicle referred to recent court proceedings involving my wife, Theresa Skelton, connected to a 2016 case barely reported at the time, if at all, despite my wife herself drawing it to the paper's attention. The report irrelevantly refers to my own former activity with the British National Party, with a possibly malicious purpose of putting us together in a public pillory for political wrongthink, guilty by association of each other's alleged thought crimes. You should perhaps beware of achieving the opposite of what you intend. Much of my BNP activism was to point out the big dangers to our country which our ruling Lab Lib Con regime was either doing nothing about or actively promoting. One of these was mass immigration. This is now a concern for so many voters that even Keir Starmer has to pretend he cares. My wife's political stance is also hardly relevant to her dealings with Basingstoke magistrates. However, the Justice and Anti-Corruption Party candidate, whom we both supported, won 40,000 votes across Hampshire in the recent Police and Crime Commissioner election. Not such an unpopular cause either. The report wants to make hay out of Theresa's contempt, which I certainly shared, for the credulous and craven compliance of so many with Boris Johnson's March 2020 coup d'etat, including the self-harming lunacy of lockdowns, mass house arrest, social distancing, masking, etc. And yes, the ludicrous state-ordained North Korean-style Thursday evening clapping ritual in veneration of the NHS. Is anybody now proud of any of this? Most NHS employees never stood to benefit. Theresa warned they wouldn't. The imminent disappearance of Winchester's A&E is perhaps collateral damage from creeping NHS privatisation, i.e. billionaire looting of public assets, hugely enabled by the phony scandemic. And that's from John Morse, Hyde Close in Winchester.
And this is a letter from G.N. Barrett entitled High Living Costs. Privatisation of our daily requirements play a large part in our high costs of living, electric, gas, and also water. Now we find that during the years profiteering at the customer's expense has caused a financial shortfall for a water company. Yes, that's about right. Profit to give shareholders a huge return. And of course, high-ranking staff, ridiculous bonuses. Now income is required. And where is it to come from? Shareholders? But they kick up a stink because they don't want to give money back. Yet, did they make any form of comments while they were collecting our hard-earned cash? No. A government needs to put a stop to this disgraceful behaviour. And that's from G.N. Barrett, Nicholson Place, Alsford.
This letter is about afternoon tea, and it's from Lucy Preston from the organisation Breast Cancer Now. Breast Cancer Now's afternoon tea is back this August, and I can't wait to dust off my whisk and stick the kettle on to raise vital funds for Breast Cancer Now. Will you join me? Every 10 minutes, someone in the UK hears the words, "You have breast cancer." Sadly, I lost my dear mum Jane to breast cancer when she was just 56. Years later, when I found a lump whilst breastfeeding my daughter Liberty, I wasted no time getting it checked out. Hearing I had the same disease as my mum was devastating, but advances in treatment meant I recovered and could be there for my little girl. Only breast cancer wasn't done with me yet, and in February 2023 I was diagnosed again in my other breast. Luckily, this tumour was caught early, so my treatment has been successful. It's been a tough journey, which is why we've decided to host an afternoon tea for Breast Cancer Now. Every day, Breast Cancer Now's research brings us closer to finding new treatments and a future where everyone with breast cancer lives. That's a world where Liberty and I can be together for many more years. But they can't do it without your support. By joining us, you can raise money for health, expert health information, fund cutting-edge research, and give someone like me much-needed reassurance. So why not get your friends together and host an afternoon tea this August? Go to, and this is a website, go to breastcancernow, all one word, .org/afternoon tea. I'll read that again. breastcancernow.org/afternoon tea. And that's from Lucy Preston, Breast Cancer Now.
This letter from Sally Yolden is entitled Lib Dem Control. I want to address the editorial comment in the Chronicle, "Are Lib Dems getting too successful?" and the subsequent letter from Ms. Martin. Local elections in England and general elections are conducted using an outdated system called First Past the Post. Unfortunately, this system doesn't accurately reflect the voting preferences of the people. Throughout the majority of the time since 1935, we have witnessed single-party majority governments, yet none of them had the support of a majority of voters. The issue of the flawed system extends beyond Winchester. In the recent May 2023 elections, the Conservatives maintained overall control of Test Valley Borough Council, despite the fact that the Liberal Democrats secured a larger share of votes. To achieve stability, fairness, increased voter engagement, and better accountability, it's imperative that we move away from first past the post to a system of proportional representation, PR. This system is already employed in most modern democracies around the world, as well as in Scotland, Northern Ireland, Wales, and even in the Church of England. It's a crucial step towards achieving a more representative and democratic society. While Labour and Conservatives shy away from electoral reform, as the current system benefits them the most, adopting PR is a core policy of the Liberal Democrats, who believe in creating a system where every vote matters. I'd like to invite people to join the national campaign for PR called Make Votes Matter. This cross-party movement aims to ensure that every vote counts and strives for a stronger democracy and improved politics. By joining this movement, you can actively contribute to the push for electoral reform and help shape a better future. I hope that together we can bring about positive change and create a fairer and more inclusive democratic system. And that letter's from Sally Yeldon, Fernhill, Brashfield, and she's the Borough Councillor for Ampfield and Brashfield and the local group leader of Make Votes Matter.
And this letter's from Robin Petherbridge, entitled Train Signs Woe. I went to London by train from Basingstoke recently for the first time to avoid the replacement bus from Basingstoke to Mitchell-Dever, which is where I usually park to catch a train to London, and was shocked at how atrocious Basingstoke's signage is. They are not thinking at all about people who don't know the station. I parked in the north side car park. The north side station entrance was closed, with no sign pointing to the underpass that you have to walk through to get to the station entrance. When you arrive back at the station, there's no sign to the underpass to get back to the car park. The car park itself has no exit signs. When you do exit the car park, back onto the road, there's no road sign indicating how to leave the town or get to the M3. Basingstoke clearly doesn't do signage. And this is from Robin Petherbridge, Hillview Road, Romsey.
Continuing the railway theme, this letter entitled Railway Pickup is from Christopher Gordon. Recent letters have highlighted the unsatisfactory drop-off pickup point, or problem, at Winchester Railway Station. In the wake of Railtrack's taxi rank fiasco and Hampshire's assumption of its aggressive responsibility for parking in the city, there is still no sensible solution that takes account of the fact that trains are sometimes late and don't coordinate with parking wardens' minute clock-watching pettifoggery. Yes, of course there needs to be some reasonable control over parking, but as Andrea Morrison pointed out on May the 9th, the station drop-off point is compromised by massive concrete obstructions and buses on their regular routes can't get past any car stopping, however briefly. It's difficult to conclude other than that Hampshire's operation of the policy is at least as much about hawkish revenue raising as it is about parking control. The wardens were even lurking on Bank Holiday Monday when there was the additional chaos of numerous parked rail replacement buses. After I had been ticketed recently, there being no safe place to wait for a delayed train, I asked the civil enforcement officer where he would have advised me to wait. Gladstone Street car park, I was told. When I commented that one of his colleagues might also be lurking there with intent to slap fines on temporarily parked cars of people meeting rail passengers at the station front, there was no answer other than I could appeal. My appeal was rejected, with the curiously unhelpful statement that, quote, the lack of legal parking is not a valid reason to cancel a penalty charge notice while acknowledging the points raised in your challenge, unquote. So, maybe someone responsible would care to devise something that is legal. Meanwhile, I would urge anyone caught in quotes, to contest their penalty charge notice to maximise legal and administrative time wastage. Loss of easy revenue might help concentrated minds on coming up with a workable solution. So writes Christopher Gordon, Corns Close, Full Flood, Winchester.
This letter from Simon Lever is entitled A&E Decision. I totally resonate with Eileen Berry's letter, May the 9th, where she states that the decision has already been made regarding the closure of A&E. Hospital executives are simply trying to sell it to a public that is more in tune with reality, actually experiencing the frontline effectiveness of current services, which are awesome. Visiting patients, staff relocation, exceptionally busy M3 and more, common sense must prevail. However, this is seemingly reserved for public, not decision makers. On another issue, when the original plans for a smart motorway were launched, farmland alongside Badger Farm Road was turned into a construction campaign for Balfour Beatty, Chronicle May the 16th. At the commencement of the compound, I mentioned my scepticism to Councillor Jan Warwick, who assured me it would be returned to its original farmland. My fears were unfounded. I'm delighted to see natural farmland once again, located close to Winchester. Farmland and countryside are important now and for future generations. And that's from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm in Winchester.
And this is a letter from Roy Perry, entitled Strong Leader. I should like to place on record a tribute to Councillor Rob Humby, who is standing down as leader of Hampshire County Council. I worked with Rob in my time as leader of the county and appreciated his commitment and dedication to his work in local government. Thank you, Rob. None of us should take this great county of Hampshire for granted, or the work of the county council, even in difficult financial times. A month ago, I attended the Hampshire Music Service spring concert at the Anvil in Basingstoke. It was a brilliant performance by talented young musicians drawn from schools across Hampshire. Introducing the concert, the orchestra director said words to the effect, "Do not take this level of performance for granted. Most counties have abandoned such services. But in Hampshire, we are grateful to the commitment of so many volunteers and to the county council for maintaining such great opportunities for our young people." And that letter is from Roy Perry, who was former leader of Hampshire County Council, from Canada Road, Wellow.
That concludes the letters. Next, we have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment, and that will be followed by First Person.
And the editorial comment this week is entitled, "Time to Get Ready for Junction 9 Disruption." Approval for the new interchange between the M3 and the A34 at Winnell has finally been given. National Highways aims to start work on the 200 million plus scheme in 2025, and it is expected to take around 3 years to complete. This will be the biggest civil engineering project in the Winchester district since the construction of the final link of the M3 through Twyford Down in 1992 to 1994. People who were around then will remember the chronic disruption that it caused for months on end as traffic diverted into the city centre and the city was sometimes reduced to gridlock. It is highly likely that similar issues will be caused this time too. One mitigating factor now is that the city has park and ride car parks, which reduces the amount of commuter traffic heading into the city centre. But as this comment noted in 2021, the new improved interchange at Winnell will move congestion to other places. A new bottleneck is likely to be created elsewhere as more traffic is attracted onto the M3 and A34. Maybe it will be further south, or perhaps north at Newbury, or the interchange with the M4. One of the lessons that was learned from the anti-roads movement in the 1990s, sparked by the Twyford Down works, was that spending on roads infrastructure was akin to putting a hamster in a wheel, a never-ending cycle of running faster to stand still. We really should be spending more time on how to reduce traffic and get out of this expensive and self-harming mindset.
This week's First Person by Khalid Aziz is entitled "The NHS Blood Scandal." It is 1984 and I am dispatched to Chandler's Ford to track down a family who were thought to have been affected by the newly breaking news that people with haemophilia had contracted HIV, the precursor to AIDS. Their son was regularly injected with factor VIII, a substance made from blood plasma that makes blood clot. Most of us generate our own factor VIII. Haemophiliacs do not. For parents told that their child has a factor VIII deficiency, it's devastating. A son can never play football for fear of sustaining an injury that will bleed, externally if you are lucky so it can be seen, internally if you're not so lucky. Girls are less severely affected. Growing children have to learn to curb their natural exuberance for fear of what might happen. Imagine then, if you're told your child has contracted HIV as well, but no one can tell you why, at a time when all anyone knew about HIV AIDS was that it could probably kill your child, and there was no known cure. The family weren't answering their phone, and the thought was that they might answer the door to me, a familiar 6 o'clock TV face. As it turned out, they did, and invited me in, but not before I witnessed at first hand why they had shut themselves away and drawn the curtains in broad daylight. As I walked down their quiet cul-de-sac, someone was cutting their hedge. "Is this where the so-and-sos live? I hope you've come to get them moved on. They can't stay here. Their kid's got AIDS. We've spoken to the council about it." Hard to imagine nearly 40 years on, but such was the fear of the then unknown so-called gay plague. I settled on the family's sofa with their glum, hapless 6-year-old only child, cause of the family's pariah status, sat opposite. They explained how his health had been deteriorating, with symptoms very different to that which he had previously experienced. They'd been reassured by their paediatrician that there'd been no change in his medication, and his regular injections were all normal as before. Now, you may rightly want me to explain why I was pursuing this tragic family just for the titillation of 6 p.m. viewers of Coast to Coast. Well, we'd got wind there was a bigger picture here, and the Chandler's Ford family were not alone. These were pre-internet days, and unlike post office sub-postmasters, they had no way of knowing about, let alone contacting, other sufferers. If they could tell their story on camera, it might start to shake things up. They did, and on the back of their story we could talk about how their child had come to contract HIV/AIDS. With the establishment of the NHS, other health-related services had burgeoned, not least of these the blood transfusion service. In true British tradition, people volunteered a pint of their blood every 3 months, in return for nothing more than a smile of thanks from the nurse, a cup of tea and a biscuit. Enter some bright spark in the NHS, who decided that it would be more efficient, cheaper, to buy in blood products from abroad, particularly the USA. Here, in their largely private health system, people didn't volunteer. They wanted to be paid for their blood. It used to be the way injecting drug addicts funded their next hit. Sharing needles, they were vulnerable to picking up hepatitis and, as it turned out, HIV too. Prisoners, another high-risk group for similar reasons, also contributed their infected blood. You didn't need a 5-year inquiry to tell you it was a bonkers decision, and the even more heinous cover-up a travesty. No heads will roll as a result. It was so long ago. Someone will doubtless say, lesson will be learned. I bet they won't.
Now to the week's announcements. A reminder that next Thursday, the 30th of May, will be the Winchester Talking Newspaper AGM at Littleton Village Hall at 2 p.m. The speaker will be Chris Dixon, who is the Chief Executive Officer of Open Sight, and the AGM will be followed by tea. If you plan to be there, could you please let John Richards know on 02380 732 888. That's 02380 732 888. Sunrise around now is about 5 o'clock in the morning, and sunset is around about 9 p.m. in the evening. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. That's 01962 861 229. And the number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. We now continue with further items of news.
And this is the ME Alliance is to hold an annual fundraiser. Twyford Parish Hall will be alive with the sound of swing and soul this June to raise funds for a local non-profit organisation. On Saturday, June the 8th, the Lyam White Band, who regularly play at the Concord Club, will be performing at the Parish Hall to raise funds for the ME/CFS Alliance. The ME/CFS Alliance is a non-profit think tank made up of patients, carers and friends who are focused on how to make a positive contribution to improve the quality of life for people whose lives have been hit by the disease ME/CFS. Myalgic encephalomyelitis, also called chronic fatigue syndrome, or ME/CFS, is a condition that causes extreme tiredness and a range of other symptoms. Charity chair Opal Weber-Philp, who lives in Winchester, said, "We are a small cog in a big wheel of charities and organisations trying to navigate the NHS system and provide the best treatment and support possible for those living with ME. The annual fundraiser promises to be a fun evening and allow us the opportunity to fundraise vital funds. We look forward to offering everyone a warm welcome and to celebrate all of the progress we've made so far. The Alliance has received generous prizes for the event from local businesses such as The Ivy, Cornflowers, Warren's Office Supplies, Bowman's Ales, Kingsgate Wines and Provisions, Twyford Stores and Orchard Therapies."
Fantastic festival may be a record breaker. Alsford could soon be home to a world record holder following this year's Watercress Festival. Organisers of the festival invited a Guinness World Records adjudicator to witness Glenn Walsh's attempt to beat the record for eating watercress. This came after he ate 80 grams of the plant in 31 seconds at last year's World Watercress Eating Championship event. This year, Glenn managed to beat his rival, Sam Baffo, to hold on to his position as reigning champion. His time of 28.98 seconds beat the previous official record of 37.68 second. That's not right, it can't be because it's less. Anyway, and Alsford is now waiting for the Guinness World Record adjudicators to confirm it. Glenn was particularly delighted because, having had an operation on his ankle, he was forced to sit to compete rather than stand, and was concerned that it might affect his watercress eating abilities. Despite this, he won the trophy.
Wonderful.
Claire May, festival manager, said, "It's been another fantastic year, attracting huge crowds to Alsford. I'm immensely grateful to all our sponsors, old and new, and to the incredible band of volunteers who make it all happen. It's a genuine community event which really puts the town and watercress on the map. Well done, too, to all our winners, especially Glenn. We're all crossing our fingers he'll be confirmed Alsford's very own Guinness World Record holder." Other winners at the festival were Kate Parker from Horse Chestnut Herbals, who won Barter's Best, an award named after one of the founders of the festival, Charles Barter, which celebrates the most innovative use of watercress in a product. Kate, a registered herbal medicine practitioner, one with her watercress cough syrup. This year's watercress king and queen were Arthur Stevenson and Bella Mills from Sun Hill Junior School. They were crowned by Tom Amory, managing director of the Watercress Company, with watercress crowns made by local florists The Wild Bunch, before parading down Broad Street dispensing freshly harvested watercress to the crowds. The team from Abbey's Heroes, the official charity for the festival, distributed more than 4,000 bags of watercress in return for donations, with the final amount raised still to be announced. And this article is accompanied by a photograph of these chaps sitting down and leaning forward, stuffing watercress into their cake holes as fast as they possibly can. It's a sight to behold.
Blood scandal shows need for leadership. Winchester MP Steve Brine says the government needs to ensure that there is decent leadership in the NHS following the final report on the infected blood scandal. The inquiry report by Sir Brian Langstaff found children were used as objects of research, while the risks of contracting hepatitis and HIV were ignored. Of pupils who attended the Lord Mayor Trelaw College near Alton in the 1970s and 1980s, very few escaped being infected. And of the 122 pupils with haemophilia who attended the school between 1970 and 1987, only 30 are still alive. Speaking on BBC's World at One on Monday, Mr. Brine, the MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford, and chair of the Health Select Committee, said, "The report, it's 2,500 pages long. We've got to reflect on it, and I think that's what the families want us to do today. Tomorrow is a different day, but I think today's report is like a tsunami." He said, "We need to make sure there is decent leadership in the NHS, which is able to learn from this. So we will be using our powers as a select committee to talk to the Secretary of State and work with other select committees. We've already talked about that this morning with my officials to make sure we take the statecraft or the failure of statecraft forward with what is within what is left of this Parliament." That's not much. "And we will be using all the powers at our ability to do that. Obviously, I've reflected a lot on this in recent days, and while I've been the chair of the Select Committee and I'm very interested to go into the detail of what Sir Brian says about the failure of statecraft, but the question I've been asking myself is, how has it taken this long? And there have been so many false dawns. Because we're in a new country, we're not familiar in the art of good governance and policy failures? Clearly not. So then, is it that we don't have decent people who can ask questions and get to the bottom of this? I don't think it's that either, and therefore the conclusion I came to, and it seems Sir Brian Langstaff says this in his report, is that we have a story here of systemic governmental political failure and cover-up. And that does remind me, I'm afraid, of Morecambe Bay, of Mid-Staffordshire, so I think, however late, the system will correct itself. I think today's focus is rightly on the families, and tomorrow we'll move on to how much, how quickly we can do what is the moral case now for the compensation."
E-bike safety action plea. Meon Valley MP Flip Drummond has signed an open letter asking the Prime Minister to tackle the import of unsafe e-bikes and to improve regulations. The popularity of e-bikes has risen, but there are issues, and MP was told at a Westminster event organised by Brompton Bicycles and the charity Electrical Safety First, ESF. Emergency service figures released in March revealed there were 11 deaths in the UK last year in fires caused by e-bikes. The bikes are also becoming more powerful due to conversion kits, meaning they can travel at over 15 miles per hour without pedalling at all. There are concerns about the government's recent proposals on changes to e-bike regulation. The proposed regulation changes could increase the fire risk posed by unregulated e-bikes and e-bike conversion kits. Brompton and ESF said, and they both want to see improved standards for conversion kits and charging systems, as well as mandatory markings on lithium batteries to better inform households they are not suitable to be disposed of in general waste. Mrs. Drummond said, "I'm concerned about more powerful e-bikes on our roads and the fire risk they pose. E-bikes travelling at more than 15 miles per hour is a danger to pedestrians and other road users and does somewhat eradicate any health benefit from cycling. We also need to see that e-bikes are as safe as possible from fire risk. I urge the PM to look again at any changes to regulations that might jeopardise standards and to halt the increasing power of the bikes."
Riding to Remember supports dementia aid expansion. A Winchester charity has raised more than £6,000 for its dementia support services with its Ride to Remember campaign. St John's Winchester hit the figure as the campaign coincided with Dementia Awareness Week across the city. The campaign encourages individuals in Winchester to cycle 100 miles or 100 kilometres during May. Challenge champion Mark McLaren has been leading the charge. Diagnosed with early onset dementia, Mark took part in the Hampshire Hilly 100 on Sunday, May the 19th. St John's Dementia Support Service has assisted more than 500 people living with dementia, their carers and families over the past 18 months. Ride to Remember aims to raise funds to support the expansion of the service. An appeal target of £10,000 would enable St John's to sponsor an Admiral nurse for 40 days or a dementia support worker for 75 days. Additionally, it would cover the full cost of the service's free weekly memory well-being centres for an entire year. The campaign will run until May the 31st.
Girl choristers celebrate 25th anniversary. Winchester Cathedral's Girls' Choir has celebrated its 25th anniversary with a special service. The service featured performances of two new works by the award-winning composer Carenza Briggs and Simon Lowley, a previous director of music at both Salisbury and Sheffield cathedrals. The Dean of Winchester, the Very Reverend Catherine Ogle, and Bruce Parker, the chairman of the Cathedral Friends, which funds the girls' choristers, cut the anniversary cake with Dr. Andy Lumsden, Director of Music, and Claudia Grinnell, sub-organist and choir conductor, alongside. Former choristers and cathedral colleagues all joined the present girls' choir to take part in the service. David Hill, the cathedral's Director of Music when the choir was formed, was also among the large congregation at the service, which was followed by a reception in the north transept.
Council is cutting back on grass for No Mow May. Hampshire County Council has been cutting back on grass cutting this month to help wildlife. The council said it is supporting the national campaign No Mow May to encourage garden owners to put their mowers away, help growing wildflowers bloom, and provide habitat and food for pollinators. Figures show that since the 1930s, the UK has lost around 97% of its flowering rich meadows, vital for pollinators like bees and butterflies. To combat the loss, the wild plant conservation charity, Plant Life, started the No Mow May campaign in 2019. Leaving the grass to grow allows for increased wildlife, generating a biodiversity environment for pollinators such as hoverflies, bees and butterflies, which help combat climate change. Wildflowers also provide food for other creatures like birds and small mammals. A Hampshire County Council spokesman said, The County Council uses a range of methods to support nature recovery and increase pollinators across the diverse range of locations that are under our management, including supporting No Mow May, where it is practical and safe to do so. Selected areas at all five of our county parks are left to grow over May and beyond to create nectar-rich corridors for insects to rest, feed, and breed. No More May signage is used at three sites to raise awareness with visitors and social media posts help to inform and highlight these messages.
Career criminals caught on CCTV. They were certainly prepared for a burglary. Anthony Harbun and Leon Cobley were dressed in dark clothing, wore balaclavas, armed with a crowbar, and had taped the registration plate of their getaway vehicle. They broke a window to get into the Three mobile phone shop in Winchester High Street at 4 a.m. on Sunday, February the 18th, a court heard. There was a snag. They had been spotted by the City Council's CCTV cameras and the police were alerted. So as the pair rummaged through the upper floor looking for mobile phones, the police arrived to arrest them.
Excellent.
Harbun, Mr. Cobley and all. Harbun, 55, of Ringwood Road, Bournemouth, and Cobley, 52, of no fixed abode, admitted the offence in police interview and pleaded guilty at the earliest opportunity at Basingstoke Magistrates Court the following day. Prosecuting Matthew Bolt said both men were career criminals, with the court hearing Cobley has 25 convictions for 54 offences and Harbun 39 convictions for 90 offences. Paul Patterson, mitigating for Harbun, a second-hand car dealer, said he had found himself in a financial position that he needed to remedy. He was in significant debt. He said Harbun had moved from Birmingham to Bournemouth to tackle his drug problems, and there had been no offending since 2015.
Oh, dear.
Aksa Hussein, for Cobley, said he had been addicted to drugs his adult life and a 25-year relationship had broken down last year. He was homeless and had lost £3,000 deposit in a scam on Facebook Marketplace. Sentencing, the judge, Mr. Recorder R. Harris, said, both of you have been described as career criminals with a specialism for burglary. The reason put forward for this burglary is that you were both found yourselves in difficulties financially after you paid a deposit on a property to a person who didn't own it. Harbun was jailed for 8 months, Cobley for 11 months, after also admitting having an axe in his car in King's Lynn in November 2022. Both men have been in custody since the burglary, around 3 months.
Air ambulance team holds celebration event. More than 250 people filled the Winchester Science Centre to celebrate the work of Hampshire and the Isle of Wight Air Ambulance. Dedicated supporters who keep the charity's doctors, dispatchers, pilots and paramedics responding to the most critically ill and seriously injured people across the region 365 days a year gathered on Thursday, May the 9th. Dale Muffett spoke about needing the life-saving skills of the air ambulance team when he was hit by a car while out jogging in Portsmouth on New Year's Day 2021. Dale needed an emergency pre-hospital blood transfusion, a surgical chest procedure, and to relieve pressure and reinflate his collapsed lung, and was given an anaesthetic to be artificially ventilated. Dale was seconds from dying and is now paralysed from the waist down. He said no one knows who is going to end up needing the air ambulance today, tomorrow or the next day. It could be any one of us. It's such a vital service. And it's not just myself who is eternally grateful. It's my friends and family too. We all just owe them so much. The audience also saw firsthand the vital role of teamwork between the air ambulance and road ambulance crews from South Central Ambulance Service as the two organisations played out a realistic demonstration of the considered steps they take when treating a severely injured patient. Keith Wilson, Director of Income and Engagement, said, "Our evening of celebration event gives us a unique opportunity to thank hundreds of our supporters for all they have done and continue to do to support our life-saving charity. Nearly £4,000 was raised on the night through donations and sales of raffle tickets. Thanks to donations from its supporters, the charity continues to evolve and respond to an ever-increasing number of incidents, with more than 750 calls for help this year, a 24% increase on the same period last year. This is largely owing to extra crews and resources on the road, funded entirely by the public."
First woman chosen to head Labour. Councillor Kim Taylor has been elected as leader of the Labour Group, one of the opposition parties in Hampshire County Council. Councillor Taylor will be the first female leader of a political group at Hampshire County Council. Councillor Jackie Tustain has been elected as deputy leader of the Labour Group. Councillor Taylor, who represents the Basingstoke Central Division, said, "I'm proud to be representing Labour in Hampshire. The group will continue its positive and proactive approach set by Councillor Alan Crawford, the previous leader. I will be seeking an early meeting with the new council leader to discuss service changes," Councillor Taylor said. "She will be keeping up the pressure to safeguard the interests of residents and Hampshire's most vulnerable members of society. As well as cuts to highway services, proposals to remain funding for homeless support and community transport, like Dial-a-Ride, will be decided by the Cabinet in July." Councillor Tustain said she will continue to work on the issues that matter most to residents. "The Labour Group would like to hear from the 1.4 million Hampshire residents about what they feel the priorities for Hampshire should be. Residents can compete on an online survey at Hampshire Labour sites, / the Big Survey."
Play area damaged by fire is reopened. A play park set on fire in 2022 has finally reopened following a safety inspection. Work to repair and replace the fire damaged equipment at Fraser Road Play Area in Kingsworthy started on Monday, April the 15th, with the park remaining open during most of the project, which took around 2 weeks to complete. The repairs were needed after the park was targeted by arsonists who set some of the equipment on fire in September 2022. Firefighters were called after the blaze was spotted by a passerby. Flames spread from the play equipment in the park, damaging a bin and a nearby car. Some of the equipment was completely destroyed, including children's favourite, the wooden steam drain, which has been replaced. Kingsworthy Parish Council posted on its Facebook page on Friday, May the 10th, to confirm that the work to repair the fire-damaged park had been completed, with a required pre-opening safety inspection on Tuesday, May the 14th. However, the inspection on Tuesday did not take place, with the Parish Council confirming this in a Facebook post on Wednesday, May the 15th. A spokesperson for Kingsworthy Parish Council said, "Unfortunately, due to circumstances outside both the Parish Council's and contractor's control, the planned safety inspection had to be delayed. However, I can confirm that the inspection took place on Friday, May the 17th, and the park has now reopened. We would like to thank parishioners for their patience and understanding whilst the repair works were carried out. We hope the younger members of our community enjoy the new train.
Opening date delayed. A Winchester coffee shop has pushed back its opening date. Carvey Coffee in Jury Street was going to open its doors to customers on May the 20th. However, the shop has pushed back its opening due to unexpected challenges. A spokesperson for the shop said, "Unfortunately, we must delay our grand opening. Every detail matters in our quest to craft the perfect cup of coffee, from the beans we select to the unique atmosphere we want to create for you. Our beautiful historic building, with its rich and creative history, in the last 24 hours has presented us with some unexpected challenges. Just as the perfect brew takes time, we're taking this extra time to honour the building's legacy and make sure everything is just right." The spokesperson said a new opening date will be confirmed shortly. Carvey Coffee replaces the former sofa workshop. According to government website Companies House, the business is owned by Dal Bandor Tamang and Dal Bandor Sakri. Mr. Tamang is also the founder of DT Coffee Roastery in Moorside Road, which is a specialist retailer supplying coffee to businesses in the UK and internationally.
Council is accused of home hypocrisy. A Winchester man has accused the City Council of hypocrisy as he could be forced to leave his home due to a no-fault eviction order. Jonathan Marsh, 48, has lived in a flat in Sussex Street since 1997 and has been served four eviction notices in the last 4 years. The property is owned by Winchester City Council and has been operated by Bournemouth Church Housing Association, BCHA. However, the lease recently expired, meaning it has returned to the City Council's stock. Mr. Marsh is again facing eviction from a council whose leader has publicly criticised no-fault evictions. In a cabinet meeting last year, council leader Martin Todd said, "As a former employee of Shelter, the housing homelessness charity, and as a current supporter of that charity, I have strong views on the use of Section 21 grounds of possession. I am very pleased to hear that it is being phased out." The council has a statutory duty to help people avoid homelessness, and we are not supporters of Section 21 grounds possession. Mr. Marsh, who has a damaged spine and has been out of work since 2015, said the previous attempts to evict him have been unsuccessful due to BCHA failing to secure the deposit. He said it will be thrown out again because they have to secure the deposit within 30 calendar days. They haven't even offered me alternative accommodation, which is ridiculous. I sense there will be more possession orders on the horizon. It shows pure hypocrisy. My position is I don't want to move out of my home, but if they offer a suitable alternative, then I will grudgingly move. Former City Councillor Ian Tate was due to raise Mr. Marsh's case at the Cabinet meeting yesterday, May the 22nd. Councillor Todd has been approached for a comment. In a statement, the City Council said, "We cannot comment on the individual case of any local resident, but when a landlord serves Section 21 notice, as Bournemouth Church's Housing Association has in this case, it's the City Council that has the legal responsibility to support the affected individuals and families to get housing where this is needed. It's one of the most important things we do as a council, and one of the many reasons we want to see an end to Section 21 notices. We take this responsibility very seriously, and this includes reassessing a tenant that will help find a new home for them and, where appropriate, keeping them informed when one has become available.
Before I read this next piece, just like to say that listeners may remember that at the end of last year we read a piece about a cannabis factory just along the road from where four of us are sitting here now in our studio in Upper Brook Street. And this is a sequel to the story, and it's entitled Drugs Release. A Winchester man who was arrested after a huge cannabis factory was found in a city centre nightclub has been released from bail but remains under investigation, police have confirmed. The 55-year-old was arrested after Vodka Bar and Nightclub in Upper Brook Street was raided by police on Monday, November the 20th, when a large number of cannabis plants were found in a room at the back. A police spokesman said, "This investigation is ongoing. The 55-year-old man has been released from conditional bail, but remains under investigation while our inquiries continue."
Chance to find out all about fostering. Interested Hampshire residents are being invited to an informal drop-in event on May the 25th, hosted by Hampshire County Council's fostering service at the Ark in Winchester from 2 till 4. This forms part of Foster Care Fortnight from May the 13th to the 26th, an annual campaign by the Fostering Network to raise the profile of fostering. The event offers an opportunity to learn more about fostering and the extensive training and support available. Throughout the campaign, foster carers and children are sharing fond memories of their experiences. Potential foster carers are required to be over 21, have a spare room, and demonstrate patience, resilience, and positivity. Councillor Edward Heron, County Council Cabinet Lead Member for Children's Services, said, "It's incredible to hear from our foster carers, including their own birth children, as well as the children in their care, as they speak about the profound impacts that different fostering moments have had on their lives, from the ordinary to the life-changing. I would urge anyone interested in fostering to visit our team at the upcoming event on the 25th of May, or if they are unable to attend, to get in touch with our fostering service for an informal chat using the contact details on our website."
Step out and help at Walk. People are being urged to step out for a good cause and enter a fundraising walk on Sunday, June the 2nd, in aid of Winchester Hospice. The 10K sponsored walk will see people travel along part of the Watercress Way. It's been organised by Winchester Rotary Club, and organisers say they are still also in need of volunteer marshals to help on the day. The walk will start at the King Charles Pub in Kingsworthy at 11 a.m. and follow a circular route before ending up back at the pub for lunch, in brackets optional to purchase. Mayor of Winchester City, Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Russell Gordon Smith, and Nick Vaughan, Chair of Trustees at Winchester Hospice, will be there to show their support. There is a 5K option finishing at the Plough in Itchen Abbas. For more details or to volunteer to help on the day, contact Nick Bell on 07488 883570, and Nick Bell's number again is 07748 883570.
Going for Gold at Charity Plant Fair. A Winchester charity which supports adults with learning disabilities recently held its annual plant fair. Winchester Gold's event was at Upper Farm in Headbourne Worthy on Wednesday, May the 8th. The plant fair featured a wide selection of specialist plant growers from Hampshire, offering a huge choice of herbaceous plants and shrubs, with particular emphasis on colour and shape, climbers, roses and herbs. Organised by Winchester Gold's fundraising committee, the event is a key source of cash for the charity. The fair was opened by the charity's patron, Lady Louisa Portal, MBEDL. There were talks and gardening tips by expert gardener Gillian Taylor on themes including more colour for less work, perfect plants for sustainable gardening, and let's talk about roses. Chair of the fundraising committee, Ros Nell, said, "We were thrilled with the huge turnout and an even greater selection of stalls this year, with 6 plant nurseries and more than 40 stallholders. We were delighted that we had well in excess of 600 people attending." Betty Chadwick, Chief Executive Officer, said, "We work with our members, their families and the whole community to find better and more inclusive ways of doing things, and the day is a lovely example of community engagement."
Tractors on Track for Taste of Past Times. Members of the Wessex Historic Tractor and Implement Club have held their annual Spring Road Run. 31 members and friends of the club set off from Middle Farm, Cheriton, at 10 a.m. on Sunday, April the 21st, in a range of vintage machines. The convoy travelled along farm tracks which passed through the battlefields of the Civil War before heading northwest along Cheriton Lane past the Battle of Cheriton Memorial towards Ropley Dean. A collection from members and friends of the club for Wessex Cancer Trust was made, and a donation of £320 has been handed over. The Wessex Historic Tractor and Implement Club has been invited to display the vintage tractors at Westland Farm Shop's open day on the 6th of July, and will also be at the South Downs Show on August the 10th and August the 11th. The club will hold its annual Working Weekend Tracks Across the Field event at Froxfield on August the 17th and August the 18th. And there's a wonderful photograph showing these fabulous old vintage tractors trundling across a field. There's about a dozen of them there. It looks great fun.
Yes, under the message Winchester Race for Life 2024, headlined in big letters, Superheroes in a Sea of Pink. The 2024 Winchester Race for Life drew hundreds of people to raise money for life-saving cancer research. More than 520 supporters collectively raised £30,000 for Cancer Research UK. Many people donned fancy dress. Superheroes, ballerinas and even ketchup bottles could be seen running the route through the North Walls Recreation Ground. At times, the track became a sea of pink. Fitness instructor and breast cancer survivor Sarah Slark, 47, of Andover, was among those taking part. Sarah said, "My type of cancer was HER2 positive, so I received a drug called Herceptin, which Cancer Research UK helped to develop." Kerry Whitfield of Hedge End was taking part with her daughter Emily and friend Julie Parker. Kerry said, "We've been doing Race for Life for 10 years, and today we're remembering my mum, whose birthday it would have been. No matter how cancer affects us, life is worth racing for. Sadly, nearly one in two of us will get cancer in our lifetime. Race for Life has the power not only to transform lives, but to save them. We are proud that Race for Life has already helped double survival rates in the UK. Life-saving research already helps people living with cancer every single day. It's thanks to our supporters who fundraise that we can go further to discover new ways to beat the disease and create a future where everybody can live longer, better lives, free from the fear of cancer.
Making a song and a dance about May. The threat of rain did not dampen spirits in Winchester last weekend. Hundreds of dancers gathered in the city centre on Saturday, May the 18th, to celebrate Mayfest, the city's traditional folk event. Visitors to the city were treated to free performances from 30 Morris, Clog and Appalachian groups. They performed around the city centre, in St Morris's Covert, outside the cathedral, the Buttercross and the Great Hall. At 2 p.m, people were invited to give the moves a go themselves during a community dance which was hosted by the Winchester Morris Men. There was also a programme of folk music showcased in St Lawrence's Church from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. And there was quite a few photographs accompanying this, but the one I like most is a photograph of the Winchester Morris Men, who in their get-up and some with blackened faces and goodness knows what, look very medieval.
Café Mark's second year. A community café that operates from the village hall has marked its second successful year in operation. Somborne Café is based at the Jubilee Room in King Somborne Village Hall every Tuesday morning from 10 till 1. Staffed entirely by volunteers, the cafe offers a range of cakes and cheese scones produced by local Winterslow bakery, Fee's Amazing Brownies. Sausage rolls continue to be firm favourites. The range of coffees and teas is sourced locally from Coffee Bean Company in Auer. The cafe aims to provide a social hub where groups and individuals can meet and socialise. It is a not-for-profit organisation run by the community for the community, and prices are kept below the high street equivalents. Alistair Dodds, who founded the cafe with wife Sarah, said the cafe has proved a firm favourite.
Endangered monkey born at Marwell Zoo.
Oh.
An endangered cotton-topped tamarind monkey has been born at a Hampshire zoo, which is asking people to help name the baby. Marwell Zoo near Coldham Common is launching a competition to name the tiny monkey, with voters given the option of three names from the Adams family. Oh. This follows the family tradition, as older siblings are called Pugsley and Pubert. The names to choose from are Fester, Lurch and Gomez. Animal team leader for primates and small mammals, Amy Denny, said parents Miko and Gert would take turns carrying the new arrival. Amy said cotton-top tamarins cling to the fur on their parents' backs and tummy before becoming fully independent at about 5 months old. She continued, cotton-top tamarins are native to Colombia and are critically endangered, with only around 2,000 individuals left in the wild. Last year was quite overwhelming for the first-time parents, learning to look after their infants and being the sole care providers. However, this time around, they have the help of juveniles Pugsley and Pubert. Cotton-top tamarins cooperatively rear their offspring, meaning all members of the troop take it in turns to carry the babies.
Aww.
This gives the parents an important chance to rest. The babies have an incredible grip and cling on to the carrier while leaping around the habitat, which, although a little nerve-wracking, is great fun to watch. That concludes our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors for selecting the extracts, to the copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams, and to our readers today, who were Tony Bergstrom.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Jane Rutter.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope. And a reminder that you can also hear Winchester Talking Newspaper on AWAS Community Radio 99.8 FM and digital on Saturdays at 5 p.m.